welcome to the Access Utah Holiday Special. We do this this time of year, every year. It's a great pleasure. Tom Williams with you. And you just heard Mike Christiansen on the guitar. He'll be with us for the hour playing music for the holidays. We have with us in studio Tim Slover, author of The Christmas Chronicles, among many other works, presenting humorous and poignant readings for the season. Mike Christiansen, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate being here.
Appreciate it always. I know that holidays are busy, especially busy time for a musician like you. Thank you for coming in. Tim Slover, thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's not that busy for me. Yeah. I just love coming here around Christmas.
Yeah, thank you so much. We appreciate it so much. So, Mike, I mean, I don't know if listeners get tired of me asking you, but I'm endlessly fascinated. Are you playing airports again?
Yeah. I just finished playing the Thanksgiving marathon there. I played the day before Thanksgiving from about 7:30 in the morning till about 3 in the afternoon. And, it's a great job. There's nothing more interesting to watch than people, and there's not a more interesting place to watch people than an airport.
And you're there to, I guess, pacify and ease the journey, I guess.
Yes. It seems to make a difference. I mean, people they request tunes, and they're dancing and singing along, and, some of them hang around for a while.
Well, I'm glad we got the government shutdown fixed before the Thanksgiving travel. You would have had to play extra hard, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. And the airport has its perks. Those TSA people, bless their hearts, that were working during the shutdown, they were all in a pretty good mood because they're all back at work and things are going full swing. And I know all their favorite tunes.
Yeah, you do, yes. Yeah. I guess you'd get to know them. Yeah,
I do. It has its perks. Then if I'm playing another time of the year, it's like, hey, Mike, where are you going?
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll bring me up to the front.
Let's go. Some more perks. Yeah. Well, Tim, what do you got going on this particular holiday season?
Well, tomorrow I fly to London, and we do every once in a while through the continuing education program at the University of Utah a thing called Christmas Time in London. So it's 10 days with about 20 people, and my great colleague and friend Jane England and I take them to plays and take them to concerts. It's a real tough assignment.
Yeah, it's a tough assignment. That's wonderful. That must be a nice place to be during the holidays, right?
It's fantastic. Yeah. Christmas just spills out of everywhere in London.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I should tell people, I know a bunch of facts about these two gentlemen, but our listeners may not. So Mike is are you emeritus professor? You're a retired professor of music at USU.
Yes and yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes and yes. You're emeritus professor. Okay,
yeah,
yes.
I am.
Wonderful. And I think busier in retirement than you were, and you're one of those folks, right?
Yep. I retired from one job and kept the other three.
Yeah, you're right. And Tim, tell me your position at U of U.
I'm a professor in the Department of Theater.
Ah, yeah, wonderful.
Aspire to be emeritus.
Yeah, aspire to be emeritus. Yes, yes. I think we all aspire to that at one point or another. You've written some plays. Tell me a couple of those titles.
I guess Joyful Noise is the best known one. That's about Handel and the writing and first performance of Messiah in London. A movie coming up called Fellowship. That's about the friendship of J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis.
Oh, great.
That's the one that's in my head now.
Yeah, so you wrote that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. We'll look for that. That's great, yeah.
In about, 2 years, look for it.
Yeah. Mike, you've written some, I don't know what you call them, instruction manuals, I don't know. I'm mangling it.
They're called books. Yeah.
They're called books, yes.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. Yes, I have. Yeah. Well, and some instruction manuals, too. Yeah. But a lot of guitar music compilations and method books.
Yeah. Another little factoid, and I promise we'll get into music and reading, but about you, Mike, that I'm fascinated by. You went to Brazil to lose your accent. We're not talking about speaking accent.
Right. Yeah, my music accent. Yes. Yeah, I went down there and I was working with Antonio Adolfo, who was a great piano player down there and very well known, did some work with Sergio Mendez and Antonio Jobim, and also wrote some stuff for Stevie Wonder. And so I worked with him for a while, and I worked with a guitarist named Thiago Trojano. But when I got down there, Antonio said, "What are you doing here, Mike?" And I said, "I want to lose my accent. I said, I sound like every other American when I play samba and bossa nova, and I want to lose my accent." He said, "Great. First thing you do is take percussion lessons." So I took percussion lessons and studied the Brazilian percussion instruments. And then the trick is to apply what you learn on those percussion instruments to your right hand. So you you play those rhythms with your right hand. And it was great playing. When I left, he said, "Mike, you sound like a carioca," which means a local. And I knew he was lying, but it made me feel really good.
High praise. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you're listening to the Access Utah Holiday Special. Let's jump into the holiday spirit here. Mike, what's the first piece you're going to play us?
Do a medley of "God Rest You Merry Gentlemen" and "Greensleeves," and in several guitar styles. So I'll start off with a little flamenco and then go to maybe some kind of a country feel thing and then into a kind of a jazz feel.
Beautiful. That's Mike Christiansen on the guitar. "God Rest You Merry Gentlemen" and "Greensleeves." That's your arrangement, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah. Several different styles there.
Yeah, throwing a little bit of stuff for the guitar players there.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Well, Tim, what's your first reading for us?
Two pieces that I'm calling imaginings. Imagining something about Christmas. The first one is by an American poet named Theodosia Garrison. She was born in 1874 and really achieved her popularity in the early 20th century. The poems, though, remain loved by those who love Christmas poetry especially. They have a kind of thoughtful lyricism. So in this poem, short poem, she imagines in the first person the thoughts of a shepherd on that night who stayed on duty when the others left and went to Bethlehem to visit the newborn Christ child. And she prefaces her poem with a four-line kind of thematic piece, which is, "There are in paradise souls neither great nor wise, yet souls who wear no less the crown of faithfulness." "The Shepherd Who Stayed" by Theodosia Garrison. "My master bade me watch the flock by night. My duty was to stay. I do not know what thing my comrades saw in that great light. I did not heed the words that bade them go. I know not were they maddened or afraid. I only know I stayed. The hillside seemed on fire. I felt the sweep of wings above my head. I ran to see if any danger threatened these my sheep. What though I found them folded quietly? What though my brother wept and plucked my sleeve? They were not mine to leave. Thieves in the wood and wolves upon the hill, my duty was to stay. Strange though it be, I had no thought to hold my mates, no will to bid them wait and keep the watch with me. I had not heard that summons they obeyed. I only know I stayed. Perchance they will return upon the dawn with word of Bethlehem and why they went. I only know that watching here alone, I know a strange content. I have not failed that trust upon me laid. I ask no more. I stayed." Second piece is by Wendell Berry, a poet. It's hard to say all that he is. He's an American poet. He's a novelist. He's an essayist. Gosh, he's an environmental activist. He's a cultural critic. And he's a farmer in his rural Kentucky, which is the place he loves. Over many years, he wrote what he called Sabbath poems, and they were occasionally collected into books. This poem is from his 1987 collection. It imagines what it might be like, if you're on a farm, to open your barn door and see the nativity. This is called "Remembering That It Happened Once" by Wendell Berry. Remembering that it happened once, we cannot turn away the thought as we go out, cold, to our barns toward the long night's end, that we ourselves are living in the world it happened in when it first happened. That we ourselves, opening a stall, a latch thrown open countless times before, might find them breathing there, foreknown. The child bedded in straw, the mother kneeling over him, the husband standing in belief he scarcely can believe, in light that lights them from no source we see. An April morning's light, the air around them joyful as a choir. We stand with one hand on the door, looking into another world, that is, this world. The pale daylight coming, just as before, our chores to do, the cattle all awake, our own frozen breath hanging in front of us. And we are here, as we have never been before, sighted as not before, our place, holy, although we knew it not.
Wendell Berry, "Remembering That It Happened Once." Previous to that, Theodosia Garrison, "The Shepherd Who Stayed." Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Mike, what do you play for us next?
Have Yourself a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
by Christy Anson on guitar there. Have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Did I hear Flintstones?
Yes, you did. It's a favorite trick by jazz musicians. Mm-hmm. They it's called quoting. And mm-hmm. when you're playing a tune that you recognize the chords that are used in a lot of tunes, and you just, as part of your improvisation, you steal that other tune.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of Blue Moon in the end.
Blue Moon, that, yeah. Yeah, I thought I recognized something there, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. A little bit of fun with that. Thank you, Mike.
Uh-huh.
Stimp, before we have you read the next piece or two, you what do you do? You just have your eye out for these through the year, these pieces? How do you select these?
I do. I don't think you quite realize how important this day is for me all through the year. So, yeah, whenever something occurs, I happen to run across something, I snag it. I could do about 5 hours of this, you know, yeah. Should you ever decide, you know, we need a five-hour Christmas hour. Show.
We'll think about that.
Mike, would you?
Yeah, I'm good.
We could all go down to the airport.
Yes, really. Yeah.
These two pieces. Now, everyone has to work somewhat around Christmas time. You know, most people do. But some people have Christmas-related jobs that they do only at Christmas time. And this is two short poems about those people. The first is by a remarkable poet named Alison Joseph. She's an American poet of Jamaican heritage. She has quite an interesting life. She was born in London, 1967. She grew up in Toronto and in the Bronx. And now she teaches at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. She founded and directs still there the Young Writers Workshop. She's published about 8 books of poetry. She's won every possible award. This poem was written in 2003, and it comes from her book of poetry called Imitation of Life, and it's called The Black Santa. I remember sitting on his bony lap, fake beard slumping off his face, his breath reeking sweetly of alcohol, a scent I didn't yet know at 5. And I didn't know that Santa was supposed to be fat, white, merry, not shaky and thin like this department store Santa who listened as I reeled off that year's list. A child's oven I'd burn my fingers on, a mini record player of gaudy plastic I'd drag from room to room by its precarious orange handle, an Etch-a-Sketch I'd ruin by twisting its dials too hard. My requests, as solemn as prayer, fervid, fueled by too many hours of television, too many commercials filled with noisy children elated by the latest game or toy. I bet none of them ever sat on the lap of a Santa who didn't ho, ho, ho in jolly mirth, whose sunken red eyes peered out from under his oversized wig and red velveteen cap, his yellow teeth, long fingers tinged with yellow. I did not find it strange to call this man Santa, to whisper my childish whispers into his ear, to pull on his sleeve, to let him know I really deserved all that I'd asked for. I posed for an instant photo with him, a woolen cap over my crooked braids, mittens sewn to my coat sleeves. No one could have convinced me this Santa couldn't slide down any chimney, though his belly didn't fill his suit, and his hands trembled just a bit as he lifted me from his lap. No one could have told me that a pink-cheeked, pale-skinned Santa was the only Santa to worship, to beg for toys and candy. I wouldn't have believed them. Wouldn't have believed anyone who'd tell me Santa couldn't look like me. Brown eyes, face, skin. Chris Bevan was for many years a primary school teacher in Berkshire, England, where she's from. But gradually, her teaching career gave way to her writing career. She's now the author of about 30 books of poetry and prose. This 1998 poem catches her doing what she likes to do best in her poetry. She likes to become other people or other animals, or in one poem, a badly behaved washing machine. Here she's a minor character in a kid's nativity play. And remember, kids have to work at Christmas. They have to do the nativity play. They have to take the roles. This is called Just Doing My Job by Claire Bevan. I'm one of Herod's henchmen. We don't have much to say. We just charge through the audience in a henchman sort of way. We all wear woolly helmets to hide our ears and hair, and Wellingtons sprayed silver to match our tinfoil spears. Our swords are made of cardboard, so blood will not be spilled if we trip and stab a parent when the hall's completely filled. We don't look very scary. We're mostly small and shy, and some of us wear glasses, but we give the thing a try. We whisper henchman noises while Herod hunts for strangers, and then we all charge out again like nervous Power Rangers. Yet when the play is over and Miss is out of breath, we'll charge like henchmen through the hall and scare our mums to death.
Two poems about those who work at Christmas time, The Black Santa by Allison Joseph and Just Doing My Job by Claire Bevan. Tim, thank you so much. Appreciate that. And you heard Mike Christiansen on guitar there underscoring those poems. Thank you. Mike, what's next for you to play for us?
Well, as we all know, Silent Night was originally written on the guitar, so I thought it appropriate to work Silent Night into our program. The story is that the organ broke in the town where the song was going to be composed. It was originally supposed to be composed on the organ, but the organ wasn't working, so it was composed on a guitar. And I'm going to play, first of all, one time through, I'll play it very much like the original. I think it was probably just some finger picking going on with the vocal, but I'll try and put the melody in there and keep it kind of simple. And then we'll doll it up a little bit.
Silent Night. Yeah, very appropriate, especially since we have a guitarist with us, right, Mike? Yeah. Thank you. That's powerful. Let's go to the next reading, Tim.
Okay. This is an event I think a lot of people know about that happened, and it's really interesting to hear the actual accounts of people that it happened to. These have been collected by two historians, John Miltimore and A.J. Baim. They are historians of the early 20th century and particularly of World War I. They describe in this brief account a remarkable event that took place during the first Christmas of the war, of World War I, the World War I Christmas Truce of 1914. War had already been raging in Europe for months when Pope Benedict issued a plea from Rome on December 7, 1914, to leaders of Europe, declare a Christmas truce. Benedict saw how badly peace was needed, even if it was only for a day. The First Battle of Ypres alone, fought from October 19 to November 22, had resulted in some 200,000 casualties, mostly German and French soldiers, but some English and Belgians. The First Battle of the Marne was even worse. In light of this carnage, the Pope asked, quote, that the guns may fall silent at least upon the night the angels sang. The European leaders ignored his plea. But then, something miraculous happened on the eve of Christmas. From no man's land, the barbed wire-filled area between the trench works of Allied and Central forces, German troops, in a spontaneous act, put down their weapons and invited English soldiers to celebrate Christmas with them. British machine gunner Bruce Bairnsfather wrote about it in his memoirs. Like most of his fellow infantrymen of the 1st Battalion of the Royal Warwickshire Regiment, he was spending the holiday eve shivering in the muck, trying to keep warm. He was crouched in a trench that stretched just 3 feet deep by 3 feet wide, his days and nights marked by an endless cycle of sleeplessness and fear, stale biscuits and cigarettes too wet to light. Here I was in this horrible clay cavity, Bairnsfather wrote, miles and miles from home, cold, wet through, covered with mud. There didn't seem the slightest chance of leaving except in an ambulance. At about 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve, Bairnsfather noticed a noise. I listened, he recalled, away across the field, among the dark shadows beyond, I could hear the murmur of voices. He turned to a fellow soldier in his trench and said, do you hear the Boches kicking up that racket over there? Yes, came the reply. They've been at it some time. The Germans were singing Christmas carols. In the darkness, some of the British soldiers began to sing back. Suddenly, Bairnsfather recalled, we heard a confused shouting from the other side. We all stopped to listen. The shout came again. The voice was from an enemy soldier. Speaking in English with a strong German accent, he was saying, come over here. One of the British sergeants answered, you come halfway, I come halfway. After some back and forth talk, enemy soldiers began to climb nervously out of their trenches. Normally, the British and Germans communicated across no man's land with streaking bullets, but now there were handshakes and words of kindness. The soldiers traded songs, tobacco, and wine, joining in a spontaneous holiday party in the cold night. And it wasn't confined to that one battlefield. Starting on Christmas Eve, small pockets of French, German, Belgian, and British troops held impromptu ceasefires across the Western Front, with reports of some on the Eastern Front as well. Some accounts suggest a few of these unofficial truces remained in effect for days. One German infantryman described how a British soldier set up a makeshift barbershop, charging Germans a few cigarettes each for a haircut. Other accounts describe vivid scenes of men helping enemy soldiers collect their dead, of which there were plenty. German Lieutenant Kurt Zemisch of the 134th Saxons Infantry, a school teacher who spoke both English and German, also described a pickup soccer game in his diary. Quote, eventually the English brought a soccer ball from their trenches and pretty soon a lively game ensued, he wrote. How marvelously wonderful, yet how strange it was. The English officers felt the same way about it. Thus Christmas, the celebration of love, managed to bring mortal enemies together as friends for a time, end of quote. The one thing all the accounts have in common is a general feeling of merriment among the soldiers. Bairnsfather could not believe his eyes. He wrote, here they were, the actual practical soldiers of the German army. There was not an atom of hate on either side.
It is beautiful. It's amazing that that happened, right? And it's wonderful for you to bring that to us to recount that. The World War I truce of 1914, John Miltimore and A.J. Baim. Well, we're going to head toward a brief break here. You're listening to the Access Utah Holiday Special. We have Mike Christiansen on guitar and Tim Slover presenting readings for the season. Appreciate the underscore again there, Mike, on that piece. So we're going to take a very brief break. We'll be back with more from Mike and Tim, the Access Utah Holiday Special. Listening to the Access Utah Holiday Special. I'm Tom Williams. Very pleased to have with us Mike Christiansen on guitar playing music for the holidays. We have a playwright, Tim Slover. He's author of the Christmas Chronicles and other works. He's presenting humorous and poignant readings for the season. Grateful for this tradition in my life and hopefully yours as well. So let's begin the second part of the program with a piece featuring Mike Christiansen on guitar. What do you play for us, Mike?
White Christmas. But we talked a little bit earlier about some Brazilian music. I'm going to play this as a bossa nova. It seems all they can do down there this time of year is dream of a white Christmas. So it seemed appropriate. So a little bossa nova white Christmas.
White Christmas with some bossa nova feel. That's wonderful. Yeah. Yes, I've been in South America during Christmas, and it's middle of summer.
There's
no snow. It's hot. Yeah, it's kind of different. Yeah. Especially when you're hearing some of those carols, right?
Right.
It's all about pine trees and
and
white Christmas. Yeah, let it snow, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's a nod to the good folks in the Southern Hemisphere. Thank you. Well, Tim, what do you read for us next?
Well, back up in the Northern Hemisphere, John Betjeman was poet laureate of England from 1972 until his death in 1984. So he died as poet laureate. I think that's really interesting. He was also a renowned broadcaster, like you, Tom, and he was a humorist. So it's not surprising when Who's Who asked him for a brief biography, he wrote back that it ought to describe him as John Betjeman, poet and hack. This poem is maybe his most well-known poem. It puts together an ancient divine birth and a contemporary secular Christmas, and it's just called Christmas, John Betjeman. The bells of waiting Advent ring. The stove is lit again. The lamp oil light across the night has caught the streaks of winter rain. The holly in the windy hedge and round the manor house, the yew will soon be stripped to deck the ledge, the altar, font, and arch and pew, so that the villagers can say, "The church looks nice on Christmas Day." Provincial public houses blaze and corporation tram cars clang. On lighted tenements I gaze where paper decorations hang, and bunting in the red town hall says, "Merry Christmas to you all." And girls in slacks remember Dad, and oafish louts remember Mum, and sleepless children's hearts are glad, and Christmas morning bells say come, even to shining ones who dwell safe in the Dorchester Hotel. And is it true? And is it true, this most tremendous tale of all, seen in a stained glass window's hue, a baby in an ox's stall? The maker of the stars and sea become a child on earth for me? And is it true? Or if it is, no loving fingers tying strings around those tissued fripperies, the sweet and silly Christmas things, bath salts and inexpensive scent and hideous tie so kindly meant. No love that in a family dwells, no caroling in frosty air, nor all the steeple-shaking bells can with this single truth compare, that God was man in Palestine, and lives today in bread and wine.
Beautiful. It's John Betjeman. Christmas. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. Before we go to the next selection, Mike and Tim, I'm thinking about right now, so I want to get this in. I want to give you both a chance to plug away. Do you have recordings that you want people to go and buy? I was looking up Lightwood Duo, Mike, and you can find it on Apple Music and Amazon, for example. Anything you'd point people to?
Yeah, I don't know where that's available, but maybe there. And recordings are kind of, I haven't been doing some of that except for if you go to MikeChristiansen.com, there's some of my recordings there. We used to do CDs, but people don't have CD players anymore. I mean, some do, but, you know, so we've kind of gone from cassette to CD to air. You know, and so they can download some of the music there if they would like. But, yeah, and just, you know, when I'm playing casuals, I'd love to see people there, and whether I'm playing locally here or whether I'm on the road.
All right. MikeChristiansen.com is a place that people can go. Tim, I want to plug Christmas Chronicles. We love it here at UPR, and we put it on every year, including this year. Go to upr.org to look at our schedule. We have it running over a week, and then we have it in its entirety in a Christmas Chronicles marathon on Christmas Day. So this is just such a wonderful piece that you wrote, right?
Yeah, thank you. You can also buy the Random House book.
The Random House book. All right, go to Amazon or somewhere to buy that. Anything else you'd like to? When's that film coming out that you were talking about?
Oh gosh, I mean it's I hope it comes out.
Okay,
the script is done.
Still working.
Money's being raised. You know.
Yeah. Very good. Anything else that people can go find stuff?
Well,
featuring Tim Slovert.
I don't know if you're watching the new PBS Ken Burns series.
Yes, definitely.
On the Revolutionary War. But it's sparked some interest, I'm pleased to say, in a couple of plays I wrote a few years ago on the Founding Fathers. They're collected in a volume. I think they're called Two Plays on the Founding Fathers. Everything's at Amazon.
So. Yeah. All right, look for Tim Slover on Amazon. Thank you. Well, what do you read for us next?
Well, You've heard the phrase, the reason for the season. And I came across this. This is a very exercised, I think, young man who objects to this whole idea of the reason for the season. And I believe he's talking to, like, his best friend about it. So in the same vein as you may remember the 10 reviews of Christmas, the 12 signs of Christmas addiction, the 12 last-minute Christmas gifts, this is called the reason for the season in the voice of this very exercised young man. Okay, I know, I get it. You read some article or listened to some podcast or got some brainiac idea from some holiday show about making a meaningful Christmas, and it got to you, right? So now you think, this year, I'm going to switch out the hollow, commercial, non-meaningful Christmas I now know to be the key thing wrong with civilization in these cynical times, and instead make a really meaningful, spiritual, emotional, holly jolly, yet hushed and holy Christmas for my loved ones. Really? Look, I don't want to, you know, tread on sacred December ground or something, but really? First off, you're actually good at hollow, commercial, non-meaningful Christmases, and so don't, you know, look a gift horse in the mouth or whatever, because how many things are you really good at? And I'm not pointing fingers or anything, because how many things am I really good at? Animal sounds is one thing, but that's a tangent. Second of all, setting up a really meaningful Christmas requires serious skills, which do you have? I pause for reply if you know what I mean. Listen, I'm your friend, right? We hang out, we watch games, we treat each other to muscle milks. Okay, enough said. Let's not get weird about it. So you got to believe I'm looking out for your interest when I squash flat your definitely bad idea about trying to do a Christmas that's just going to make trouble for you. And for me, too, because guilt by association, right? Okay, that's another tangent. But to, you know, spare your feelings or whatnot, I'm not going to, like, bear down on you personally, but it'll be like, oh, some other guy had this crazy idea about swapping the hollow-type Christmas for the meaningful one. So for that guy, here are some super bad Christmas ideas. Number one, Christmas gifts you make yourself. The idea here is that you put yourself into the present. Every stitch or rivet or paint job or whatnot is put in with love and thoughts of the giftee. Really? What about every curse word when something goes wrong, which it obviously would? Now, of course, if you've got the mad skills for this kind of thing, then be my guest. But you know who really has mad skills? Apple and Adidas and Anheuser-Busch, and that's just the A's. Number two, going out Christmas caroling. It'll be so fun. We'll bundle up with coats and hats and scarves and walk around the neighborhood and knock on our friends' doors. And when they open up, we'll sing Good King Wenceslas and rocking around the Christmas tree and stop. Just stop. Do you live in a movie? Because only in a movie do A, you know how to sing with harmony, etc. And B, it's not cold. And C, people want to stand there listening while you interrupted their dinner or family fight or whatever. So please, okay? Number three, watching a heartwarming Christmas movie together. Okay, it's not the worst idea, because it's really just sitting watching TV, because you weren't thinking of everybody piling into a car and going out to a movie theater, were you? Because are there movie theaters anymore? Okay, so you're gathering around the old flat screen, and what if everybody doesn't want to watch Die Hard, which is the best Christmas movie? Just do yourself a favor. It's a super bad idea. Four, attending a Messiah sing-along. Okay, I checked. And I could find zero about this band Messiah. I figured it must be a kind of branch off of Nazareth, the metal group, remember them, which in ancient days definitely had some kickin' tunes you could sing along with if you didn't mind maybe hurting your throat a little. But if Messiah is like Nazareth, their songs don't seem like they'd be very Christmassy, except for people who, like, hate Christmas. So, no. Number five, sending personalized Christmas cards to family and friends. Can you see I've got my head in my hands? Can you hear me groaning? How can you be so? Look, everybody knows, except you apparently, that the stuff people put in those letters in their Christmas cards is made up. Bro, it's fiction. I've definitely verified this for my own self because I've skimmed through over two of them. I mean, little Johnny won the science fair and our Susie got a beauty school scholarship. As if. But I mean, if you want to put more lies into the world, be my guest, I guess. Number six, putting the reason for the season back into Christmas. All right, you're serious now, obviously, because you spelled reason with a capital R. But let's all just sit and breathe for a minute, okay? Just
What is this reason with a capital R anyway? And does it involve like the Pope or Cat Stevens or some other holy personages? Because if that's the case, why? Plus, it might be kind of sacrilegious or blaspheming or something. Just looking out for you, bro. Now, last one. Being a secret Santa. Whoa, dude. This really is sacrilegious. How did you think up this one? There's only one genuine Santa, and I figure he hates impersonators, except the ones at the mall, which must be licensed or something. Geez, secret Santa. Back up, all right? I don't want the lightning hitting me, too. Okay, I've got several more of these, but I don't want to, like, harrow you up, some other guy, since by now I'm positive you get the point, because you're smart like my friend who was thinking along your same lines. So enough said, right? I mean, case proved. Look, listen, I'm on my knees, figuratively, bro, and like begging you, also figuratively, to recommit to the hollow, commercial, non-meaningful Christmas, which means so much to me and you, and, you know, right-thinking people. Plus, did you know they've got football and basketball games on Christmas now? Bro, dude, how much more meaning do you want?
Some super bad Christmas ideas. Yeah.
You got to squelch some things.
You got to squelch that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. That's Tim Slover. Mike Christiansen, what do you play for us next?
A tune called Starbright. This is in a style called the habanera. But after that last reading, I'm wondering if I should do a... Maybe that kind of a feel.
There you go.
No. I'll do it with this feel.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. It's Mike Christiansen on the guitar. Well, Tim Slover, what do you read for us next?
This is a poem called What Remains, An Old Man's Christmas. What remains? Christmas burst like fireworks above our upturned child's faces. Don't dare call it foolishness. As though this outsized wonder, this sudden rush of glory meant nothing, you know better. It was scarlet fire, an emerald ocean, and sticky gladness. And when first it roared over us, then yearly we longed for it, through the day glow summer romps, the new pencils and school clothes,
the jack-o'-lantern candy in a pillowcase, then past the paper pilgrim hats and shoe buckles until, yes, here it came again, at last, the angel-fired colored lights, the solemnly inscribed mercantile lists, the fizzing snow falling through December skies like kid amphetamines. And now, what remains? Came then a translation from receiving to making marvels. But how was it done? Was it searching nooks and crannies of commerce to acquire the whole list? Was it madcap, perilous hooking of lights too high on ladder too short? Or fetching the annual evergreen from tree lot or attic? Or risky motoring on overstuffed and over-iced thoroughfares from where we were to where we wanted to be? Or rolling up sleeves at sink and stove to turn handed-down recipes into this year's treats? Or was it the reading of tales, or the lusty or quavery singing of carols and candy cane songs? All for them, and therefore all for us. And now, what remains? Now that all are grown, and time flies all apart, save of days a precious few. Since the will to make and deck and bustle has waned, has the flickering flame burned to the bottom of the candle? And is it guttering out? And then when gone, only after image and soon the dark. What remains is what was always there. For the promise of the manger is simply this, a reassuring smile that the socket set, spangled hairband, vegetarian gift card are impossibly exactly right. What remains? The reaching out, the gathering in, the door opening into warmth, the talk of this and that on frosty street, the wrong forgiven and truly done, a Christmas smile, a Christmas laugh, a Christmas clasp of hands, a Christmas knitting of hearts, and two and three and all together breathing, we are here, we are here, we are here, together in the kindling light.
What remains, an old man's Christmas. Thank you, Tim Slover. Appreciate that. And Mike Christiansen playing the underscore there on the guitar. Well, we've reached just about the end of our time here on the Axis Utah Holiday Special. Mike Christiansen on the guitar, Tim Slover presenting readings for the season. And before we have Mike play us out with another piece, Tim Slover, thank you so much. Always such a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I really look forward to it.
Thank you. I always look forward to this time of year to see you and Mike, and hear the wonderful readings and the music on the guitar. Mike, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom. It's always a pleasure. This is a great gig, and I love playing behind Tim's reading. That's that's beautiful stuff, man. You hear those inspiring words.
Well, thank you. Thank you to both of you gentlemen, and thanks everyone for listening. We'll have Mike Christiansen play us out. What do you play?
A little bit of The Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
All right.